Listen and follow the Left Wing Rugby podcast with me, Will Slattery, and Luke Fitzgerald.
I hope that they kind of keep it calm, keep it measured. I think if you get those things right, I think they've got the best potential and headroom in terms of how far they can go and what kind of performance they can deliver. They'll have a great day.
Every week on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave, 1919, 1920. There's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on the Indo Daily, why the richest among us have gotten richer during the pandemic. It's said the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Well, it's never been more true than during the last 2 years of COVID-19, as those with billions blasted off into space while the poorest were left scrambling for vaccines.
Go, Jeff, go, Mark, go, Wally, go, Oliver, you are going to space.
I'm Kevin Doyle, and today on the Indo Daily, we look at the Irishmen, and yes, it's all men, making it big in the Billionaires Club.
Wait for it. You take out the last 10 rows of seats, and we guarantee that the stand-down, we'd have a standing cabin and a seated cabin. The seats would be €25, the standing cabin would be €1. I guarantee you we will fill the standing cabin first.
I'm joined by Sunday Independent business editor Samantha McCochrane and deputy business editor of the Irish Independent to discuss whether it's time for a wealth tax. John Isle, it's well known, a lot of people would know at least, that Jeff Bezos is the world's richest man, reputed to be worth $155 billion. Now, we don't have anyone in Ireland that comes near that massive figure, but we do have quite a substantial number of people in the Billionaires Club.
That's right, Kevin. Depending on who's counting, there are anywhere from 5 to 15 Irish billionaires. And the biggest one is someone who is Irish by marriage. He's an Indian-born Irish citizen called Palanji Mistry. And he's the single largest shareholder of Tata Group. That's a huge industrial conglomerate in India that owns everything from Tetley Tea to interests in steel companies and so forth. And that guy is the top of the list. But some of the more familiar names that we'd all kind of know would be the Collison brothers, who are the founders of Stripe, John Manure, JP McManus, and then long-term investors like Dermot Desmond, telecoms baron Dennis O'Brien, the founders of Kingspan, Eugene Murtaugh, and you know, there's a few others there, Paul Coulson, and then even Michael O'Leary, who's the chief executive of Ryanair, by virtue of his shareholding in that company, is in and out of the Billionaires Club. He's there or thereabouts. So there's quite a few. You know, some of them are household names, and then, you know, others you might not recognize the names.
And Samantha McCochrane, their wealth, depending on various estimates, is anywhere up to 50 million. But let's talk about a few of those people, because we know the names, but we're maybe not entirely familiar with how their wealth has come to be and what they're doing with it. So let's start maybe with the Collison brothers.
Yeah, so the Collison brothers are leaders globally on the fintech space. So basically, when you're buying something from a website, you may well be using their technology, Stripe. And it's become just a massive company, one of the biggest in Silicon Valley, not to talk just about, you know, from an Irish context. And they've kind of been totally embraced by the Irish people because it's a lovely story. They're young guys. They were kind of just super bright. Patrick Collison was a very young recipient of the Young Scientist of the Year. They went over to the States and, Patrick left college early to start up this business because they felt you couldn't buy things properly online. So now they're both in their early 30s. The latest fund rounding puts their individual wealth at about, you know, 8.5 billion each. That's on the low estimates. There's some estimates have them up to 11 billion each. And of course, like, as is the case with a lot of these valuations, it's on paper. So it's actually quite hard to know how much would they really own or how much they would really be worth in regards to the company. But it's safe to say they're both billionaires and massively successful young men, both in their early 30s.
And John, as Samantha mentioned, they're very popular, which kind of strikes me as a little bit unusual, because when we go down through some of these names, we're going to find that Irish people don't really have a soft spot for a lot of the people on this list, but they do for the Collisons. Why is that?
Well, I think that there's probably two reasons there. One is that they are genuinely homegrown. You know, they come from a pretty ordinary family in the Limerick area. I think there's some debate as to whether they're Limerick or Tipperary in origin. But I believe they're always against Kilkenny when it comes to hurling.
You wonder, you know, in school, sort of, can I pursue this, or should I just kind of get normal or be interested in sort of the standard things and so on? And by the time everyone's, you know, 30 or you know, even into your 20s, you realize actually that's totally fine. But often your kind of horizons don't get broadened that way until a bit later. And so I think it's important to tell the folks, you know, 10 through 20. Yeah, you have to be confident enough to be weird in those years.
I think part of it is that they do kind of present themselves as very down to earth. You know, the winning the Young Scientist puts you in the public eye in a very positive way. And then to go on, you know, to the States and start your company in Silicon Valley, and I guess reflect something good about the country while you're sort of in the middle of that world, makes everybody feel good. Now, I'm not sure how long that's actually going to last, right? So the company has remained low profile because it is still a private company. It hasn't listed on the stock market yet. Now, there's talk that Stripe will have its initial public offering either this year or next year, and they've taken some moves to put the pieces in place to make that happen. Once that company becomes publicly listed, it will be subject to a lot more scrutiny, both in the media and by its investors. And once that happens, I think some of the gloss might come off. Now, I can't say that there's anything about these guys that people aren't going to like. It's just that when a company is open to more scrutiny and gets a lot more attention, inevitably things, you know, will happen that will make people, let's say, start second guessing or revising their opinion. And it's always easy to dislike a billionaire, I think, you know, because very few of us are billionaires, and that looks like a very unachievable standard for most people. So we'll see how it goes once, you know, Stripe moves along and it matures as a company and gets into that kind of Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft territory where we start to see what it's all about.
I think as well, you know, it's sort of quite a clean cut rise to financial success. You know, they were in a certain sector. It happens to be the hottest sector, one of the hottest sectors out there. Some of the more, you know, traditional, older, longer established billionaires, you know, they really had hard graft from the start. It was deal making. There was hard deals. There was fights. There was rows. There was buyouts. So, you know, and I'm talking about the likes of Dermot Desmond and Dennis O'Brien, who've been, you know, involved in kind of corporate spats and court cases and things like that over the years, you know, which naturally lead to a different type of profile than a tech engineer or a tech entrepreneur who's founded a company. It's kind of been, no doubt, a very, very difficult journey, but it's been a sort of a linear journey, whereas some of the, there's been a lot more, you know, kind of graft and grind for some of the maybe.
Well, let's talk about those two names you mentioned there, Samantha, Dennis O'Brien and Dermot Desmond. And it strikes me particularly with Dennis O'Brien that he is a very high profile, probably the most high profile billionaire that you've mentioned so far in Irish terms, but also probably the least popular. What is it about Dennis O'Brien? And I should point out that he was a former major shareholder in this company, which has since been sold. But what is it about him that's made him so unpopular?
There's probably a couple of reasons. He's quite litigious, so he's taken on the media in several court battles, and you know, not saying the media is always very popular, but he has that reputation as, you know, not being very, very thick-skinned. And there's also from the early days, his tax residency. You know, he's a tax resident in Malta, and I suppose when he sold ESA Telecom in 2000, and he made 199 million euro tax-free. People kind of felt maybe that wasn't maybe the best, you know, way of handling the assets or the income he got from that sale.
When we sold ESA Telecom in early 2000, everybody was celebrating, and you know, everybody made money out of the deal. All my staff, all our managers, and my partners. And everybody was cock-a-hoop as such. But, you know, within a week of that, it was a bit of a leveler because I'd no office to go to. All my former colleagues were back in the business and I had nothing to do with the business. And I immediately kind of panicked in a sense that I had nothing to do with my life, from working 12, 14 hours a day to actually, you know, worried, well, how are you going to fill the day?
There's always been a little niggling thing there. Now, you know, there is always this argument, are we begrudgers in Ireland? But to be fair, I think, big, very successful entrepreneurs, generally speaking, they're not going to be bland, likable people. They have to be strong personalities and they have to be tough and they have to be decisive. And look at, say Elon Musk, who's really at the top of the international billionaires list. You know, himself and Jeff Bezos of Amazon are kind of interchangeable, nearly at the top at the moment. Like, Elon Musk is not a popular guy either. So he's known for, you know, outrageous comments, Twitter statements that his investors go crazy over. So I think you're going to have, you know, you're not going to have a likable bunch of people who make billions of euros. It's just not how it works.
And then, John, you mentioned the one that is probably the most divisive. Some people love him, want him to be president, think that he could fix our health service. And then other people think he's a complete chancer and a bit of a loudmouth. And I am, of course, talking about Ryanair boss Michael O'Leary.
Funny enough, what we wanted to do was to take out about the last 10 rows of seats. But wait for it. You take out the last 10 rows of seats and we guarantee that the stand, and we'd have a standing cabin and a seated cabin. The seats would be 25 euros. The standing cabin would be 1 euro. I guarantee you we will fill the standing cabin first.
Well, he's undeniably an incredible businessman. You know, there's no denying his effect as chief executive of Ryanair, what he's managed to do with that company and securing its position at the top of the airline industry in Europe. He is, of course, outspoken. As Samantha said, these personalities, people who succeed at this level, are going to be prickly. They're going to be, very, for lack of a better word, kind of selfish. But, Michael O'Leary is very good, I think, at capturing people's attention. And he sort of, in a way, has colonized our psychology. I mean, just think of the way he's changed our lives, but not just in terms of how we travel, but how we think about our relationship to businesses as well. I mean, Ryanair has pioneered the whole idea of disaggregated pricing, you know, the unbundling of pricing, which has gone in not just throughout the airline industry, but has gone into other industries as well. So he's a real pioneer, and I guess you have to give him respect for that. On the other hand, he talks about things that probably we don't really want to hear from him about. So, the idea that Michael O'Leary would make a great president, I'm not sure he would even agree with that. But, I mean, we've seen in the United States with Donald Trump what happens when that type of personality gets political power. And it's, let's say, it's a mixed blessing.
I think we should probably say that Donald Trump and Michael O'Leary are very different people, and I'm not sure that their politics would entirely align. But I know what you're saying. Business people who enter the political world and find that it's maybe not as easy as standing up and saying things like, let's make everybody stand in the cabin. He's made a lot of these kind of outrageous, kind of fantastic marketing, but maybe you wonder, would it transfer to public life in the same way that it can in a private business?
Yes, I guess the point I was trying to make is that both are outspoken, very entertaining, actually, whether you like them or not, very entertaining and great at capturing people's attention. Whether that translates into political skill is a different question. But, O'Leary has a 4% stake in Ryanair, which is a very valuable public company, and that's the basis of his wealth. And I think one of the reasons people say, you know, respect him, whether begrudgingly or in an embracing way, is because he can be seen, I guess, like the Collisons, to have really made that wealth himself through his work, through his ingenuity, through his fresh ideas and his ability, you know, to beat the competition.
And you said, John, that he kind of comes in and out of the billionaires club. Explain that. It's not that he's off buying loads of properties or spending money on holidaying on private islands. It's more to do with that shares in Ryanair that he holds, is it?
Well, that's right. And that's why it's important to understand what we mean when we call somebody a billionaire. In almost every case, what you're talking about is the value of their ownership stakes in a company, in a business, or in assets more generally. Michael O'Leary's wealth is based on his part ownership of Ryanair, the airline. The Collisons' wealth is based entirely on the fact that they founded a very valuable company. Same with Jeff Bezos, and the same with Elon Musk. All of these people own stakes in very valuable enterprises. Their wealth is not in cash sitting in a bank somewhere. It's basically in investment in a company or diversified over various assets, as you'd see with, say, Dermot Desmond would be a good example of that. People who have very successfully invested in lots of enterprises and have built their wealth that way. But it's not like Dennis O'Brien could tomorrow write a check for a billion euro. I don't think that would work. He would have to liquidate the company he owns, Digicel, and whatever other assets in order to get his hands on that money. So when we talk about billionaire wealth, it's very different from the kind of wealth that, you know, three of us might have when we say, look in our savings account or our pension account and say, oh, this is what I'm worth, you know, or this is the equity in my house.
It's very different from the wealth I might have, John, in more ways than that. But Samantha, before we start to talk more about the idea of a wealth tax and the Oxfam report, are there others that deserve honourable mention that we can't let the personality conversation go without mentioning? I'm thinking people like JP McManus.
Yeah, JP McManus and John Magner are a duo that have actually been in some of the Irish rich lists as billionaires. So, as John was saying, it's not an exact science. I mean, you know, it's based on guesstimates, and what we do know and what we don't know probably even it could change quite considerably the valuations. But they would be mostly linked with Coolmore Stud and horse racing. So there's several other people out there. Like last year, Philip O'Doherty in Donegal sold his company E&I Engineering for well over $1 billion. And, you know, he was somebody sort of nobody even really realised had a company of that wealth. So there's another person, Paul Coulson, makes it in. Sometimes he founded a packaging company, Arda. And Larry Goodman is another big name there. It would be a very well-known name in Irish business circles. And he's in the beef business, the meat business with ABP Food Group. So there's several people there who are very high up there on the wealth stakes and well-known personalities in the Irish context too.
In all of that though, Samantha, I haven't heard you name a single woman.
That's true. There's across the world, there are fewer female billionaires and very fewer wealthy, super wealthy women are, you know, they're rare basically. The Irish rich list would have over the years have a few female names in there. I mean, at the top levels, the Weston family would have been a feature. Now, Galen Weston passed away there not so long ago, and his wife is Irish, and Hilary Weston, and she would have been seen as, you know, a wealthy woman with who alongside him helped build up a very, very, very substantial empire. But
that was linked to Brown Thomas, was it?
Yes, they own like quite a vast business. But yeah, Brown Thomas and Arnott's was part of their business, and that was sold just before Christmas there to a Thai group. So that's changed hands quite quickly after his death. But one of the most senior wealthy Irish women would be Margaret Heffernan, and she to some extent inherited that business, but there's no doubt that she has driven that business to new levels. So
that business being Dunstores.
Dunstores, yes. And she has without doubt brought Dunstores into the 21st century with, you know, going up market for its food and bringing in designer type labels to the clothes range. And, you know, Dunn's is a huge player in an Irish grocery market that has big competitors like Tesco and the German discounters Aldi and Lidl. Very competitive Irish grocery market. Dunn's is holding its own and continuing to do well. So there are examples of very successful Irish businesswomen, but in terms of the billionaires, they are not there to the extent we might expect. And also globally, you know, there's always quite a low percentage of the billionaires and the very wealthy are women.
So, John, Oxfam are calling for a wealth tax, which is nothing new, but the hook is new because I thought global economies had suffered badly. I thought that businesses that had to close down, particularly large businesses, furloughing, all the rest of it. But Oxfam argue that it has been a terrific pandemic for rich people. And I suppose maybe it begs the question, have the rest of us wasted a crisis?
Well, it has actually. I think it's undeniable that it has been a terrific pandemic for anybody who is an asset owner, as opposed to somebody who draws a salary or gets a wage. And that requires a little bit of explanation about what's happened there, right? So initially when the pandemic started in March and April of 2020, world markets went into a panic and they crashed, right? We all remember that. They dropped enormously. But what happened after was that governments and central banks around the world swung into action to make sure that the economy itself didn't crash after the markets. And central banks pumped loads of liquidity into world markets. Governments created all kinds of COVID support schemes to give money to unemployed people, to give money to businesses to hire. All kinds of money just went washing out into the world economy. In our own country here, in Ireland, I think there was something like upwards of 20 billion spent just on business supports alone over the last 2 years. So what that did was actually rescue the value of the assets that rich people tend to own. And I'm talking about shares in companies, their bonds that they might own in their portfolios, and et cetera, et cetera. So if you're a business owner, if you're a shareholder, even if you own a lot of property, the value of all of those assets went up as the result of government and central bank action. So that made people who were already rich, they were already pretty high up in the rich stakes, even richer. But as Oxfam points out, as these billionaires and even millionaires have gotten substantially richer in the last 2 years, the gap between the top and the bottom has actually widened considerably.
And Samantha, is that gap not a good reason for a wealth tax? I know ahead of last year's budget here, Sinn Féin weren't calling it a wealth tax anymore. They were proposing a solidarity tax of an extra 3% on incomes above €140,000. Is there a good argument there for it to be made?
Look, in terms of the very wealthy contributing, on the one hand, it does make sense that they should be supporting, you know, the health service and public, the public purse with schools, etc. And why not go after some of their money? In practical terms, it's a really challenging one. I mean, if you look at the names you've mentioned there on the Irish rich list, like how many of them could the Irish government actually access? You know, the Collisons, they founded the business over in the States, you know, even though they have quite a big Irish expansion plan for its business at the moment. A number of them are non-tax residents in Ireland anyway. In the US, before President Biden was elected, it was a kind of a live issue briefly for the Democrats. Elizabeth Warren, who didn't succeed in getting the nomination, was very, very vocal about a wealth tax. But there's constitutional issues over there. And of course, it is a very a political system that's influenced by powerful, wealthy people. So it's very unlikely to see it happening there. So would we have a situation where Ireland would have a wealth tax and other countries wouldn't have a wealth tax? And how would that play for us in terms of attracting entrepreneurs and, you know, a really important thing that we've been talking about for a long time in Ireland is creating Indigenous companies that generate jobs, not just using FDI as a plank for our economy. So if we want to get people to create lots of jobs and, you know, develop exciting, interesting companies, would the entrepreneurs want to be based here if there was a wealth tax? So that's a tricky one. There is some discussion then in the States and potentially here about, well, so much of the money is tied up in property and real estate. Perhaps that's a way of getting at wealth. And I don't think Sinn Féin's in favour of property tax. So it's just, it's not as simple as it seems, you know, on the face of it. You know, tap into the big money and, you know, support the economy more, you know, in areas that need help. It's not quite as straightforward as that when you actually drill down into it.
Nothing is ever that simple, but thank you, Samantha and John, for trying to explain the Billionaires Club to us. I'm Kevin Doyle, and today's episode of the Indo Daily was produced by Mary Carroll, researched by Tabitha Monaghan, with sound design by John Smith. Archive clips came from independent.ie, RTE and Bloomberg. If you enjoy the Indo Daily, don't forget to like, follow and leave us a review.